This week on Nostalgia, we're going Clue Clue for Gaga. Welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every North American release for the NES. This week's game, as you might have heard on the intro, is Clue Clue Land. But first, here's a little bit about who we are.
I'm Sean Tresmond.
I'm Sam Smith.
I'm Joe Costu.
And I'm Mike Esposito.
It really was a little bit
about it's the smallest who we amount are. About
us. I cannot give any more information because I think it was the first episode, I tried to ask for some information, and Sean said he wouldn't tell us where he worked.
I'm still not going to tell
that's
you
right.
where
I think I think I'm okay with not going too much further into.
Okay, yeah. I mean, they don't really care about us anyway, so let's just get right into it. Let's get some initial impressions.
I gotta say, I didn't read the manual for this one. I'm usually the manual guy. I did not read the manual for this one. Just kind of went in blind. I should have read the manual.
You learned your lesson.
I don't know. I was so frustrated with how to move and how to do anything that I just died over and over and over and over and over again. So initial impressions were this game is cute. I like the music.
Our first NES game with music.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I did like the music.
Who knew it would take that
long? 3 episodes.
And it was colorful, and it looked like a real game, which I appreciated.
Joe,
that's about
initial
it.
Impressions?
I was a little confused at first, too. I also didn't read the manual, but as I started kind of figuring out the controls, that's when I started to think, like, oh, this is, I kind of liked that it was different. It was like, it's kind of like, it felt like a Pac-Man type game, but I liked that it was, as you figure out how the controls are actually functioning, you have to strategize differently on how you're moving based on, like, which peg you're hooking onto and which side you're hooking. But I thought, I kind
of
liked it.
Yeah, going off of what Joe said, and I think we'll go into it more in detail later. I did like the way that it felt. I also had no idea what I was doing when I booted the game, so I didn't go to the manual. I just went to Wikipedia, and that the first three lines of that entry pretty much told me what I was missing. So it's a pretty simple game. I don't think it really has much going on. But I enjoyed the little bit that I played.
And my initial impression, I was actually like kind of surprised about even what this game is. Like Clue Clue Land is actually like a pretty big release for the for Nintendo, at least. Like, it's one of the games that they continue to kind of re-release and port. And I mean, there's a 3DS version now.
Really?
It's like a 3D Classics. So it's the same exact game, but just in like 3D mode. There was a Verve System version of this. There was an e-reader version of this. It was an Animal Crossing, you could own it. There's so many different versions. And I've heard this name for so long, but like actually play this game and see what it's all about. It feels insignificant. Like, it feels like it's just kind of like a game that Nintendo like had their hand in, and that's kind of all it ever became. Initial impressions are kind of over, so let's talk about like the game in general. Anybody have any strong feelings about Clue Clue?
I'm just going to say I have a feeling that I might be the only one. Maybe I've only talked to one person in this room about it before. Maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but I think I might be the only one who liked it.
Correct
me if I'm wrong.
I enjoy it.
But did you it or did you love it? Like, what are you saying here?
I didn't love it.
Okay.
I didn't love it, but I didn't. I can see why people might find the controls very frustrating, but I didn't hate it.
Will you play it again?
I mean, I wouldn't play it again the same way that I don't sit down and play Pac-Man. And I'm not saying this is as good as Pac-Man, but I felt like this was like, oh, it's like a different way of doing
game.
A very Pac-Man-like game.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for me, but I had fun while I was playing.
I agree with that.
I totally agree with the Pac-Man thing. I can't put my finger on it, though. Why I feel like this is Pac-Man, other than you're a circle going through a grid.
Right.
Like,
fighting ghosts.
See, I don't...
Are they ghosts? They're sea urchins.
Yeah, I looked that up afterwards.
They're sea urchins? They're sea urchins. And they actually...
And you have sonar.
Okay, Sam, not for nothing, but I'm a little disappointed because they're in Smash Brothers as items.
Oh, that's from this?
Yeah, the guys they puff up.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay. It took me, I don't know how many games and how many deaths to realize that when you press B, you shoot like a thing that stops
the bad guys.
And so I almost beat the first level so many times, and then I would just die from these guys. And then one time I was like, oh, I should try pressing B and seeing what that does. I don't know why I thought because I've just been using the like the two buttons.
Right.
That just made it significantly easier. And then I was starting to have a good time. And by that time, I had a better grasp of the controls. And I thought that even though the controls were a little bit weird, they were fun. Like it was like a really interesting way of handling turning.
I think something we need to get out of the way here, though, is a problem we haven't run into yet on nostalgia. And that's kind of like the objective of the game. Yeah, we've never really talked about that because 10-yard fight, the objective is to play football and win. Baseball is to play baseball and win. In Cuckooland, you're like this bubble. I think that's actually your name, too, is Bubbles.
You're a fish. Aren't you a fish?
I don't know. Is it a fish? For some reason, I'm thinking that the character's name is Bubbles. But anyway, that's not the important part. You're like this round balloon-looking thing, fish thing, and you have to kind of like move across this grid to reveal these ingots, right? That will form a shape, usually. They'll form some kind of pattern. Mm-hmm. And once you reveal the pattern, that's the end of the stage, and you move on to the next one. And you kind of have these sea urchins that move around the screen and try to, like, basically, if you touch them, you die. And I will say that the hitboxes are kind of crazy because you could be, like, rounding the corner of one of your, one of your turns, and all of a sudden it's like they just show up. The thing that bugs me the most is...
They can sometimes if they see you in their line, if they have you in their line of sight for more than 2 seconds, they'll just charge at you. Did you notice that?
I did not notice that.
They'll charge. Like, they'll go like really fast all of a sudden.
Does it look like a charging animation though, or does it look like they just get fast?
They just go fast. Huh. Yeah.
I was having such a hard time with the controls in this game of just figuring out like which direction pad I needed to press, whether it was like, so just an instance, if I wanted to go up, depending on which way my character was facing, that would be either up on the D-pad or right on the D-pad. And that was kind of like, I don't know how I feel about that. Right.
Made the difference for me was when I kind of like realized that, like, okay, I'm not choosing which direction I go. I'm choosing which hook I'm throwing out. True. Like a hook comes out and hits a peg and like, oh, if I were going in this direction and the hook goes out, hits a peg, which direction would that turn me? It took me a little while to like realize that that's what was going on.
Yeah.
But once I started thinking of it that way, that's when I kind of was like, oh, these are very unique. Even now, I don't know if I have seen a game with controls like this.
Exactly.
I'm ashamed to admit that I never overcame the control. Not saying that I didn't continue playing, but I never overcame the controls. To this day, I probably will not be able to
properly
control
both. It's definitely not intuitive. It's definitely not intuitive.
But I think an interesting thing about this game, and I don't think it's talked about a lot in games that are this early in the NES, where the most complex action that you're going to make is just like if you press left, your character will move left. I think like I'm going to use one of those silly game criticism words, like this is the first game where it actually has a unique like kinesthetic like game feel. It actually has a flow to it. Like took us a while to actually understand that pressing this button has this effect, but I don't think there are many games that, especially this early in the NES, that have this sort of flow to it in that the bounces feel good when you hit those lines that turn into trampolines, or just the feeling of rounding one of those poles.
Yeah, it just feels good. I feel like once you get it a little bit, I'm like, I don't know if this really applies. Once you feel like you have a handle on the controls, it's fun. You know, it's kind of fun to move your character around the space.
I think if you're really good at this game, and I was checking out like some high scores, which were just insane. They were like over 2 million points, you know, like they went all the way to like level 299. And I think that's when the game ends. Just if you're that good at this game, it must feel good to be a master at this game because you're just so in control of what you're doing.
That being said, and maybe this isn't a demerit because most people should read the manual, but the fact that we're saying that the controls are unintuitive, like when we touched on it earlier, the entire object of the game is just like, am I collecting these ingots?
It took me a little bit to figure it out.
The fact that we had to look it up, I think that's something against it.
It is kind of unclear what you're doing, like why those ingots are forming.
To be honest, once I figured out what you're doing, which is like trying to uncover the full pattern, I think that's kind of the biggest flaw of it, because like there's not really a way to be like to know what, unless you've played and memorized the patterns, to know what pattern you're trying to.
You're just like blindlessly looping around.
And you can kind of figure out like which, you know, what.
Blindlessly.
I tried to gloss over it.
You're just trying to blindlessly. All right.
But you can sort of figure out like as the pattern is forming, like, okay, it's probably going in this direction, but still at the beginning, like, you have nothing to go on. Like, you just have to search but for the beginning of the pattern.
Once you get to those later levels where you just speed up, I feel like you get rid of some of that issue because you're just going through so many of them.
You just are uncovering things, yeah. Right? But I also did, like, it took me a minute to realize that the urchins, I guess, they can't pass the coins or whatever those things are. When you unlock something, you're making a wall, so you can stay on that side of it.
And that part I did appreciate, that it was a wall.
Also, you can destroy them permanently.
Yeah, by pushing them up against the wall.
Yeah, you hit them with your little beam thing, whatever that is, and then you push them against a wall.
Which also just feels good.
Yeah, the beam feels good, and it feels good to destroy it.
But what about those annoying holes, too, and that like you just kind of like fall into?
I mean, I think there has to at least be like
a third
obstacle.
I think but I also think you can get away with just, you know, putting a block there or something. Plus, I mean, that's what the trampolines
are. If you're just swinging over it, that doesn't count as falling
into it. Yeah, that's true.
Right.
I think that's fair enough. Yeah.
And I think like something interesting about this game, too, is like, this one actually feels like an arcade game that's ported over to the NES. The first two games we played, the sports games, they kind of feel home console-y. You know, like they were out in arcades somewhat, but like this one to me actually just kind of feels like your whole objective is just to continue to like master
the
puzzles,
right.
Get the high score. Like that's the objective of the game, and like compete with your friends and family over like, oh, hey, look at what I did.
And like an arcade game, it doesn't have much depth beyond the first. Like you can get the entire experience of this game in 3 minutes.
Yeah, it felt like a lot more action than like, you know, you're constantly moving. You're constantly, you know, you working towards your objective.
And what about, and this is just something I just remembered, but we were talking about the holes. What about those rubber bands that just appear out of, I don't know what they are, but they just appear.
Yeah.
It's like they just show up all of a sudden and it's like.
It's
like
annoying that they show up.
The urchin was following me like right behind me. Right, now I just go right into him. And
it was kind of the same thing where like the first one, it was like you're screwed. But the second one I think was usually symmetrical. Am I wrong?
I think so.
Then you kind of have an idea of like where the other one or the other ones might be.
But that might not be the case in later levels.
Right.
Sure.
But I also think that they, if you don't, you don't have to uncover them in a level, but I think that they are kind of fit into the pattern. Like, oh, like if the pattern looks like a face or whatever.
Oh, they'll be the eyes.
Are the eyes or something like that. Maybe it was just my imagination running wild, but.
So I'm going to kind of step away here for a minute. I'm going to still be here, of course, but I feel like I'm kind of leading this discussion into a, let's talk about everything that's wrong with Clue Clue Land. So I'd love somebody else to just kind of take over and talk about, you know, some feelings they had about the game.
I mentioned this before, but I really enjoyed the music. I thought that when, when the game was over and I heard the game over music, I feel like it created a feeling, you know, whereas in baseball or 10 yard fight or something, if there's like a turnover, it's just like, oh, okay, now there's a turnover.
It definitely scratches a much more primal itch in that, like, since there aren't all these different abstractions layered on top of each other, like the rules of a sports game, it has more opportunity to give you that feeling of failure once, right, like you've hit that game over screen.
It feels a little more like you're on the edge of your seat playing it, like you're a little tensed up trying to make sure you don't fail and everything, whereas like especially baseball, but also 10 yard fight was like a little more strategic, or like thinking, okay, what am I gonna do next?
Yeah, but I know what you're talking about. Like in sports, you kind of know what to expect and what happens if you do well and what happens if you don't. But in this, it just kind of happens unexpectedly, and it's just like defeat, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's, I don't know, I didn't get that from the other games so far.
And I already touched upon like just that it's just interesting how much this game has a feel all its own that a lot of I just wasn't expecting out of a launch title on the NES.
Right. So one thing that I noticed right away, and you know, I don't actually know if this is like the true source of where this came from, but the ingots they're the rupee in Legend of Zelda. They're the exact same sprite.
Wow. I remember thinking it looked like it, but is it actually?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying it is the, I'm saying it's the exact, like if you put them next to each other, it is.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not saying that like
they used it.
They used it in reference, but they probably did. I'd have to imagine because they're both Nintendo games, you know, or at least published and somewhat developed by, but I think that's just crazy that, like, you know, something so big in gaming starts here. before, you know, like yeah. The biggest stamp that this probably made is saying like, hey, here's the design for the Ruby in Legend of Zelda.
I mean, well,
like,
why do the work twice?
And also how many in like one, I don't know exactly how it works, but in one square of pixels that it uses to make a Ruby is like how many possible things could you make in that? Or it's like, right, well, let's just use that. Like,
right, right. Mm. Does anybody else have anything that they want to add here? Or
I think that's about it. I feel like it was pretty simple.
Since you guys are mentioning the control scheme, I think it is worth bringing up that they're more than anything, it's a spiritual successor. On the Game Boy Advance, DK King of Swing is this game that kind of does the same thing, not in the sense of being on a grid, but you play as Donkey Kong and you grab these, like, you're almost like rock climbing, and you swing around and then you launch yourself and you grab the next like peg on the rock climbing and move around and around in that similar style. And funny enough, you know, the Cuckoo Land, I think we were calling him Bubbles, the red character, he can be unlocked in that game as kind of like a reference to the origins of DK King of Swing. So that's kind of like his, I guess, his only other major appearance besides all of these ports that have been throughout the year. So I guess if they're porting this as many times and bringing it to Virtual Console all these times, some fan base clearly is established for this game. Whether that's us, we will determine now in the Essential Games List. It's the Essential Games List, and since this is only episode 3, I'm going to break it down real fast for the people that don't know yet. Basically, this is our Hall of Fame for the NES, but not in the way you might be thinking. No, we're not looking at these games based on if they were worthy of the Hall of Fame during the time that they came out. We're looking at these as, are they essential in today's world? You've got your PS4, your PC, you've got all these hot new games. You've even got a Nintendo Switch now, you know? It's like, there's good games on that too. Is it worth it to go back to the NES and play these games? Well, that's what Essential Games List is going to tell you. We're going to vote on it. Everybody's going to give a final verdict, and it needs at least 50% of the vote to pass into the Essential Games List. If you're wondering what that list is, you can always check it out on nostalgiacast.com, but
it might be empty.
Currently, it's empty. And if you're listening to this episode later, I mean, you might go there and see some games and be like, I didn't hear these episodes yet. Well, we didn't record them at this time. So let's just kind of get right down to it. Who wants to take us through their final verdict of Cuckoo Land?
I think that this is overall, I think it's a fun game. I don't think it goes in, you know, the Essential Games List. I don't think it goes in the Jank folder either. I think that it definitely
the first game, not in the Jank.
Yeah, I think it's its own game. You know, it's not like a. It feels very solid for what it was trying to do. I think it accomplished it really well, but it's just not something that I would really enjoy.
Okay.
Personally, to like go back to.
Okay, I'll say that this is episode 3, and of the 3 games, I think this is the most playable still. But I wouldn't say this is an essential game. But I do think it's people who like, you know, little arcade games on their phone and things like that might enjoy this game.
Ooh, yeah.
But I wouldn't put it on my Essential Games List.
On a phone, that'd be interesting. I
wonder maybe how that would control. You know?
I would maybe play it if it was on my phone. Yeah.
Okay. Little honorable mention there. I'd play this if it was on my phone.
Maybe. Although if I could play this game, I could play other NES games on my phone. So then maybe
that's
not.
True. Yeah.
I just mean people who are into that kind of game. Like that's a big part of the culture now is people who like arcade type games.
Right.
Again. So yeah, I think it's interesting to look at, but definitely not essential.
All right. And where I kind of stand on this is I definitely think, you know, in terms of an arcade game, it does bring some unique gameplay. It's definitely different than the other two games we played. And it's an interesting game to launch on the console with, because you do kind of need those arcade spaces, since that was what was big at the time. But this game gets repetitive fast. It's not exactly what I would consider a good time. I just think that you've seen like 4 or 5 levels. You've probably seen most of them. I can't imagine the people who brought themselves to all 299 levels. It's an impressive feat, and I'm sure it gets a lot harder. I don't mean to talk down to anybody who goes further than the first 5-6 levels, but for me, that was my exit point. So I have to say that this is not an essential game.
And just a quick defense of
of Clu-Clu Land, even though I'm also going to throw it back in the heap.
Spoiler alert.
It's basic. I mean, like, yeah, you could play one or two levels and understand what this game is and what it has to offer. It does have that unique bit. But so is Pac-Man. But
it doesn't drive me like Pac-Man. And I think, like, the interesting thing about Pac-Man is that, like, the ghosts, you know, the ghosts get faster, the maze, you know, like, the eating the pellets is satisfying, whereas revealing the ingots here isn't as satisfying.
Sure.
Like, it feels more random than eating the pellets.
I'm going to argue with that. I personally don't like Pac-Man. I don't think it's fun.
But you have to admit that Pac-Man has lasted. Like, as a...
Yeah, but if I had the choice between Pac-Man and Clu-Clu Land, I think I'd play Clu-Clu Land.
Wow. Yeah, there we go. Well,
yeah. That's the hot take.
That's a hot take right
but
there.
But that's just me. I just don't... I get... The ghosts give me anxiety, you know?
Which one? Pinky?
Pinky. His eyes.
And the fish.
And then there's Clyde.
What are they? The sea urchins? The sea urchins don't give you anxiety.
Well, you can attack them at any time.
You're right.
That makes me feel way better.
Once I did the same thing you did, where I forgot that you can attack, which is kind of... When I think back on it, it's kind of ridiculous. It's his only thing he can do.
Yeah.
And I didn't know he could do it.
Yeah.
But once you realize that, you're kind of the powerhouse in that situation.
Yeah, like, it feels good, because then you're just, like, swinging around stuff, and you're blasting them, and you're pushing them against walls, and then you're hitting trampolines. I don't know. I feel like you can kind of groove with this game more than Pac-Man, for me, anyway.
And I will also say, sorry, I know you're kind of in the middle of your final thought.
A very good discussion.
But I will also say that I did think it was somewhat satisfying to reveal those pieces once I realized that the urchins couldn't pass them. Because then I could be like, yeah, that's right. Like, I'm over here. I'm protecting myself with these. But yeah, I see what you're saying about the dots, too.
That basically covered everything. It's definitely got its redeeming qualities. I don't think it's fair to say that just because it's simple, that it doesn't need to be praised, just because of comparisons to many other arcade games. But I think it's got unique features, but those features aren't enough. Not on the list.
Not on the list.
Not on the list.
And that's all the time we have for this episode of Nestalgia. Join us next time for Duck Hunt, and be sure to play it yourself if you can. For more Nestalgia, please subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen, and be sure to check out NostalgiaCast.com. That's NestalgiaCast.com. On the website, you'll find links to the show and show notes, as well as our other platforms such as Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you so much for your support of Nestalgia. We thank you for spending time with us. I'm Michael Esposito, and you can find me on Twitter at Esposito Film, and I'll talk to you soon. All right, so we'll just kind of ease our way right into the post show here if everybody's cool with that.
Yeah.
For this one, I kind of want to talk about just, like, you know, your experiences at the arcade as a child.
Okay, can I bring one thing up?
Absolutely.
What does everyone think is the first NES female protagonist?
Is it like Ms. Pac-Man Samus?
Well, it makes me think, I mean, like, it's so much later, but it makes me think of Samus.
Yeah, you know? Samus, like,
that's 87, I think.
So, from what I know, that these are the first games, I think it's Bubbles from Clu-Clu Land. Earlier when you were saying he... did something. I remember when I was reading through everything, I remember thinking that they were calling her she. So I just looked it up, and yeah, I imagine it's the first female protagonist.
I'm gonna just apologize not only for calling she a he, but also because that's just gonna be something that's gonna happen often. When I look at, like, 8-bit figures,
back then it was there were not a lot of female protagonists in games.
Assume that they're male, and that's awful.
Does this include Japanese titles also, or?
I don't know. I'm not saying this is official. I'm just saying based on
NES.
Yeah.
If you said Famicom.
True.
You
know? I'm just saying based on what I know from this podcast that, as far as I'm aware, these first four games are playing are the first four games released.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right. Well, yeah. I mean, right. There may be another one in this launch, but that's interesting to think about.
Right.
And, you know, just because Clu-Clu Land is an arcade game, and, you know, in spirit at least, it kind of makes me think about, like, my childhood arcade experiences, and, like, I feel like I've missed a step in the arcade. Like, you know, I was around during, like, you know, I was alive during Street Fighter's, like, biggest time, and, like, Virtua Fighter and all those, like, you know, big arcade games kind of having their resurgence. But I never went to the arcade as a kid. We didn't have one really around me. Like, the best I had was Chuck E. Cheese. And that wasn't really, like, that wasn't great.
There's, like, movie theaters with arcades and stuff. But you're
right. They had, like, one game, and it was always, like, House of the Dead.
Yeah,
which is nothing bad about that, but as a kid, that would freak me out. Like, something about low poly 3D zombies and stuff like that, just, they kind of scare me. Like,
yeah, I mean, because we're all 90s kids here, right? Like,
90s.
I think
only
that,
90s kids.
Yep. I think that we sort of missed the big arcade.
I think we missed it though in the Clue Land sense, right? Like, we missed those.
We missed the classic arcade.
We missed the classic arcade. Like, Centipede. But I think, like, like, most of the really good PS1, Sega Saturn games that aren't RPGs were arcade games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they were featured in the arcade first, and kind of like, you know, it was like, the Sega Saturn was, like, really big to arcade fanatics, because it was, like, finally my chance to, like, play these arcade games without spending, like, $1,000 on the AVS cart or something like that.
Well, I don't know if there's any actual, like, if you're going to go into the academic history of arcades, I don't know if this is the correct term for it.
I don't think we're ever trying, like, to be, we're never trying to be
sure,
academic.
Sure, sure, but, like, we came to, we were in our adolescence and young childhood in, like, the second wave, where, like, okay, now all these games you can play just as easily on your Super Nintendo or your Genesis,
right,
or anything like that. But so what you were doing in these arcades, and I did have an arcade near me, it wasn't, like, it wasn't the best arcade, but they pivoted to, like, okay, now play these games so you can get these tickets. And it just went away from, like, I'm playing this because it's fun and I want the high score, to, like, I want the goddamn tickets.
Right. Right. Yeah, and I gotta win the really low tier prizes.
Sure. Like, I need
that mug.
Yeah.
Like, a mug actually probably would have been like 400 tickets. I mean, now it's like 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when I think of arcades, I think of, like, the wave surfer kind of game where you're, like, on the actual
on the jet ski,
turning the whole thing and stuff like that, and just games that cost more than $1 to play.
Right.
That, like,
the kind you would see in, like, a Dave and Buster's.
I guess so. I don't think I've been to Dave and Buster's.
Dave and Buster's has, like, there's a whole section of ticket games, but then there's also a whole nother section of just, like, you know, 8 racing games stacked up next to each other that, like, each person can get in the car and race each other in real time. Or, like, you know, it's like, it's like, I don't know. That was always impressive to me that those things existed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Those were, I always like those two-player racing games. Yeah, I feel like everyone just.
You never had enough time or money to get good at them.
Yeah, I feel like arcades were more than anything expensive for, like,
and I think they were mostly designed to make you lose, to continue to, you know, to
Well, I mean, there also was that that short burst of DDR. I know that a lot of kids got really into Dance Dance Revolution. I had some friends that were doing that. A lot of those movement games where you were pretty much the controller, just either stepping on things or like, even if it's just a giant motorcycle controller. I think that had its time when we were growing up, whereas most of these arcade games are getting ported to the NES or just, like, joystick, one or two buttons. Mm-hmm.
It's funny because the kind of things that you guys are describing, I know those all very well, like the motorcycle game and the racing game all stacked next to each other, and all these games, I'm like, yeah, of course I played those, but I'm just thinking, like, where did I play these? I never went to anywhere. I
did it at a laser tag place.
That's probably one of them. I know I've been to Dave and Buster's, but that was when I was older. Like, I didn't really go, and, like, maybe Chuck E. Cheese when I was a kid. But, I don't know.
And I know this is true for a lot of people, but when I think of, like, definitive arcade experiences, and I was never good at these games, but this is what I think of when I'm like, oh, that's an arcade game. I think, like, the X-Men arcade game, the Simpsons arcade game, Ninja Turtles, those four-player gigantic
brawlers
cabinets, though, too, where it's like each person had, like, their own stick and buttons, and, like, you could fit all four of you with not too cramped, like, those are the games I think of as, like, wow, the arcade. Like you still can't play that Simpsons arcade game anywhere other than, like, that. And I think, like, Xbox 360 arcade, which is, I think, dead now. Right. I don't think you can re-download that game.
And gotta go to Barcade then, I guess.
Yeah.
And come to think of it, like, I guess a lot of the games that I played on the NES probably were ports from arcades. I just didn't know it.
Yeah, no.
Because I, yeah, I, and there's one... there's one Ninja Turtles game that my cousin and I used to play all the time. We loved it. And I know there's a few of them, and there's one's bad and one's good. I don't remember which one we played.
Probably if it was on the NES, I think you probably played a bad
Turtles
one.
Turtles in Time, wasn't that SNES?
Yeah, yeah.
SNES.
Yeah, SNES Turtles in Time, that's good
but
stuff.
Then, I don't know, maybe, yeah, maybe I just have nostalgia glasses on, but right. But it probably was an arcade game, now that I'm thinking of it, because it was one of those drop-in, two-player kind of thing.
And I think, like, one last thing I'd like to say about the arcade is kind of, like, it's also a disappointing place. Like it's kind of like a casino for kids.
Oh, yeah.
And at the same time, nothing, like, we were talking about, like, you know, controls and stuff like that. Most of them suck. Like, nothing really worked. So many people had played it before you. Mm-hmm. Like, the Joy-Con. The Joy-Con. You knew, like, the joystick would go, like, you know, you try to go to the left.
Yeah.
And it would be, like, barely budge a little bit.
Every other cabinet's pretty much out of order.
And yeah. they're setting most of those games too to the highest difficulties too, because they want you to keep beating quarters. I remember I never been to a place where Pac-Man didn't immediately start on like the fastest possible speed, and like you just had like 12 no, please you had like 2 seconds with the power pellet before it went away, and it's like what? That's not Pac-Man to me.
I feel like if I was ever in an arcade with other people, I would be like playing something that's not an arcade game. You know,
like Polybius.
Like what?
Oh, I'm sorry, never mind.
Like like air hockey or something like that. Hmm. You know, if it's like, because I feel like
there is something about that, actually. You know? You're bringing up a whole nother part of the arcade that we just don't think about.
Yeah.
Like air hockey. Ski ball. I grew up on ski ball a little bit.
I feel like that's like kind of what I would go for over the arcade game.
Over just the actual, like, yeah, the digital arcade
game. I couldn't just like drop a quarter on a game and see if it was good. If I wanted to see if a game was good, I have to pay like $1.25 or something like that. You know? Just to see if it was any good.
And this, you know, we were talking about Street Fighter earlier. It's like Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, like those games. Think about how many quarters you had to feed to keep getting continues to really get to the end. You know, it was a lot harder than their console counterparts.
And the other thing about, like, and just the death of arcades is now when you find one, it's always just, even if it's not the literal lobby, it's just the lobby for whatever you're actually there for. If you're at a laser tag place, you're just in the arcade waiting for your name to get called. Or if you got, you've got a go-kart track. Mm-hmm. That you're waiting for your race, or you got batting cages in back that you could be doing instead. Like all of these like multi activity places, the arcade was just like, that's where you kill time.
Right. And yeah. I actually find it. I mean, sometimes when there's a, you know, the Museum of the Moving Image, I've seen arcade.
Well, they actually
there.
Have like, yeah, they have a pretty complete arcade right. thing too, where it's right. like they're it's a museum exhibit.
It makes me, even though arcade cabinets were like sort of before my time, it makes me kind of sad to see them in a museum. I'm like, are they that old? Right. I mean, and then they have an NES console, and I'm like, all right, let's step it back a little bit. But I mean, I guess that's what they're.
Pretty soon they'll have an N64 in there and stuff like that too. You know,
right. it just seems so recent.
And it's funny though too. But like, we're not gonna talk about this now. But like, you know, video game preservation is a huge deal. Like, you know, you're thinking like, oh, should that NES really be in there? But it's like, well, if not now, then when?
Oh
like,
yeah, no, definitely. I'm definitely have opinions on video game preservation. I'm not saying that it shouldn't be in there. I'm just saying it's sad to me that like that it was so long ago.
I think that the post show has ran its talk. So I'm gonna ask Sam to log into his computer and shut up the podcast.
Sam has all the control in the podcast.
Nice.
I think that's a nice little ending too.
Yeah. I'm just gonna. Oh yeah.
Click.
Did you stop?
Yeah.